welcome to our Core Christi monthly discussion. My name is Rachel Pachta, and I'm the Director of Ministry for the Missioners of Christ. Today, we are on our second episode discussing Searching for and Maintaining Peace by Father Jacques Philippe. We're in our summer sessions, so this is the second of three episodes that we're going to have on this book. Angela Whitehouse, our co-host, and our awesome guest, Kate Harmeyer, are continuing this summer session, and I loved getting to edit this podcast. It was something that I needed. If something, even if it looks good, if it takes away our peace, it's not from the Lord. I needed that, and I pray that you take some great nuggets from this conversation. So without further ado, here is our second of three discussions on searching for and maintaining peace.
To our summer session. We are talking Searching for and Maintaining Peace by Father Jacques Philippe. I have Kate Harmeyer here with me, who actually took French. So if you'd like to say his name properly.
More than anything, thank you for this opportunity to flex my knowledge from the late 90s. I think it would be Patre. Would it be Patre? Yeah.
No,
yeah,
Patre. That sounds here we beautiful.
Go. It would be Patre Jacques Philippe.
Beautiful. I love it. I love the French language.
I like to read this book with a French accent in my head.
Oh, oui, oui. So today we are going to be looking at section two of the book. And this section was very large. It was a lot, you know, a lot of pages here. But what we are going to be doing for all of our listeners out there is we're going to be breaking it down for you. And so we're going to break it down into four main sections. So our first section that we're going to be talking about is cultivating trust. So maybe not a section, more like a topic, probably. Mm-hmm. The topic that we're going to be talking about first is cultivating trust and how we see some of the things that Father Jacques was talking about in the first few sections, how we can cultivate trust and what that will look like in our lives. The second thing that we're going to be talking about is the surrender. So he refers a lot to fear and having this, you know, fear of suffering, fear of not being in control. And so what does that look like for us to surrender? The third thing, topic that we came up with was having patience, patience with ourselves, others, basically patience with just being human and not being God. And then our fourth thing that we're going to discuss today is discernment and how we can sustain peace in the midst of discernment and things that we have discerned, and not letting our perfectionism get in the way of what God is desiring to do within us. I'm excited for this. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, and it is such a dense section, or a dense, I guess we're calling it part two, right?
Part two,
if you will. Ooh. It's very dense. And so I like the way that you've broken it down to give us sort of headings under which we may not get to absolutely all of the goodness that is here, but at least maybe kind of round out the overall messages.
Just kind of like charcuterie it, you know, like just have a little bit here, a little bit there. And not have to, you know, we're not able to indulge all of the goodness of it, but just have a little, you know, a little bit of the salami and the cheese and some of it.
And the olives.
And the olives, of course. Okay, let's jump into this first topic that we're going to be talking about, which is cultivating trust. We're going to probably referring to the first, sessions. Go ahead, Kate.
The first section, like this whole part, he's really, you know, looking at the things that threaten to steal, you know, steal the peace. So part.
Stop. I don't know.
Stop. It's over now. It's over.
I don't know the numbers in French.
There's only three. It's un, deux, trois. We're going to be fine. But no, anyhow. So in part one, he talks really about what peace is, why the Lord desires for us to have it, why it's important, why it's worth our working towards and persisting in the pursuit of. And then the second section, he starts to talk about the things that threaten it. And so the one that really just came at me very hard is a quote on 26 that I thought was a gut punch, is what I wrote next to it in my book. Our great drama is this: man does not have confidence in God. Hence, he looks in every possible place to extricate himself by his own resources and renders himself terribly unhappy in the process, rather than abandon himself into the tender and saving hands of his Father in heaven. And then it's a beautiful section on that same page from St. Catherine of Siena's dialogue, where it starts just the first section. Why don't you have confidence in me, your creator? Why do you rely on yourself? Am I not faithful and loyal to you?
Wow.
And so as we take that whole first topic, if you will, of a lack of trust, I think that punches right to the heart of that, is that at the root, we have a great difficulty in trusting that the Lord desires to make us happy, knows what will make us happy, and then will, in fact, act to bring that about. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's it. That is totally it. I think just the fact that that quote, why don't you have confidence in me, your creator? It's just like, oh my goodness. Like, I don't know. Like, you're right. You are so right. But that act of just saying, like, I kept thinking, is God not worthy to be trusted? And I kept thinking a little bit about the Old Testament and how they would always remember the goodness of the Lord. And they would always like go back to him. And even when they had forgotten his goodness or forgotten what he had done, they would always like return to the stories of what God had done for them. Or when they didn't trust him, or they didn't trust his leaders, they didn't trust Moses, it was always like, wow, but like, do we remember like what he did for us back then, like in the parting of the Red Sea, like he opened this. And I, so often in my life, I want to cultivate a remembrance within myself where I say, Lord, I remember what you've done for me. I remember when I was having a hard time, when I was having fear, and I placed my trust in you. And in this one situation, you have exceeded that. And right now, when I'm in this moment of like difficulty and having a hard time, to just remember those moments of like, no, Lord, you haven't failed me. Like, you answered those prayers. But just kind of, it made me think of just having a spirit of remembrance, of remembering what God has done, and that he is worthy to be trusted.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when the Israelites, you know, would often forget all the great things that God had done with them, all the miracles he had wrought, all the incredible things that he had done just out of his pure faithfulness, not theirs. you know, the phrases of the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, you know, like they would, that was kind of one of the repeated phrases that God would remind them, I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Like, it's still me here who mm-hmm. knows you better than you know yourselves, who sees things with the perspective of infinity, whereas you're seeing just this tiny, tiny part of what today looks like, that I do, in fact, know you better than you know yourselves. And I do, in fact, know what is required for your sanctity mm-hmm. and desire it. I mean, just the basic belief that God is God and God is good.
Yeah.
And he loves me. Like, if we can just get those three things in right in our minds, it would seem that our trust issues would be mainly resolved, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
There's a favorite line in the movie Rudy, which I love and can probably quote the entire movie to you because I'm a Notre Dame fan. And there's this conversation between Father Kavanaugh, as a character, and Rudy, and he's in there praying because he wants to get accepted into Notre Dame, and he's praying and praying and praying and praying, and he's worked so hard and gotten rejected over and over again. And he's like, Father, what am I not doing? Like, have I not prayed enough? Like, have I not worked enough? Is there anything? And he goes, look, in 35 years, whatever the amount of years is, of theological inquiry and study, I have come up with only two incontrovertible truths. One is there is a God, and two is I'm not him. And so, you know, that we need to just kind of keep reminding ourselves. And I love how you talked about, you know, cultivating remembrance of his faithfulness and his goodness in your life, because we don't have to go all the way. We can go all the way back to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, but we could also probably just go back 3 years ago in our own lives.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And like the practice of a prayer journal is such a gift, I think, in that way. And I really want to get better at maintaining that, because it's like your own, you know, testament that you can look back at the different times in your life where he was faithful to you. And when people are faithful to writing those prayer journals, I think that they really have this witness to his all the glory, you mm-hmm. know, that he's wrought in your life despite you. So that's really,
it's one of the practices that I got into, because I had been very consistent with spiritual journaling, And one of the things that I would do is I would go to the Lord in prayer and I would just write down everything that day I was just freaking out or worried about. And from the time I was 16, it would look very different, you know, from the time through college or even after. And I would just write it down. And sometimes it'd be like exams or whatever. And then one of the things that I would try to do, I would go back to those lists and I would put next to it like how that prayer was answered. Mm. And sometimes it was like, I got a B on this exam, but like I didn't fail. Like it was just like things like that where I could see tangibly God working. And that type of spiritual practice to trying to say, okay, I am going to try to cultivate this trust in you, Lord, because I'm having a hard time tangibly surrendering. Mm-hmm. And because it is, yeah, it's just hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a good practice to do. I like the idea of going back and like actually noting those things. You know, I've worked with high schoolers for a very long time, and I'm working with college students now. And it's been very interesting seeing the different but common moments of trial that they go through based on the time of life that they're in. And it's the mountain is always so huge when you're staring at it from the base of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ones in high school were trying to figure out where to go to college, or a lot, and now that I work with college students, they're trying to really figure out a vocation, what the Lord is calling them to in their lives, whether it be discernment of the priesthood or religious life or working towards marriage or who they're going to date. Like, and so it's just different. But when they will come consistently and ask sort of advice, and they're so overwhelmed by the moment that they're in, a thing that was kind of fun to do would be like, well, what was your biggest problem 3 years ago? Mm. Like, what was the biggest concern, the thing that was like overwhelming you at that moment? And they would come up with whatever it was. I was like, is that a big thing for you now? Like, how often do you think about that now? Did the Lord work that out? Wow. And they're like, yeah. And you're like, okay, so that will be the case in 3 years, you know, for most things. There are some big things that really do stay with us our whole lives, but most of the time, yeah. And you're just to kind of say like the story is really big, and the story of our lives is bigger than the story of our day or our struggle. And there's times in your lives where you're like, I don't know how to get through this. And sometimes you just like maybe remind yourself, when's the last time I felt that way?
Yeah. That's true.
And how did the Lord work that out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next, if we're looking kind of along that theme of cultivating trust, I thought that in section two, it was really interesting. It was talking about providence, how we have a hard time believing in providence. I thought it was just this very practical, interesting concept. So many of us have difficulty believing in providence because we haven't experienced it and we want to experience something to believe in it, but then we can't experience it because we never give God any room in our lives to act. Like, we don't leave, mm-hmm. we negotiate every single part of every single situation such that there isn't this leap of faith. I think he has this example of a parachute. Like, you don't know that the parachute's holding you up until you actually let go, you know. You have to get out. And there was this example of a priest kind of writing down every comma and dotting every I and crossing every T of a homily or a sermon. And you know, that's a good thing to prepare, certainly, as somebody, you know, who sometimes speaks at things and writes things down. And it's good to prepare and to do the best that you can, but also to leave room for the Holy Spirit to work in your life and for the Lord to work beautifully in your life. You have to give the trust first in some instances. And so we get ourselves in this circle of like, oh, I don't know that I can trust that the Lord will take care of me. I will never know unless I like experience that. But then I don't give the Lord any time to take care of me because I take care of everything myself.
Just this
cycle. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like that he brought that up as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so understanding this idea of how we can cultivate trust and what that looks like for us. Let's move on to our next topic where we're going to be talking about fear. So he kind of goes into this idea of how are we going to be surrendering. So we've labeled it surrender. He talks about how are we going to be abandoning ourselves completely to the Lord. And abandonment is definitely a hard thing to do, to surrender to the Lord. Like, it is just one of those things where we can talk. I feel like I can talk about it all day. Where it's like, yes, I'm just abandoning myself to the Lord. And then I start to actually think about it and I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm holding on very tightly to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So kind of just what surrender looks like for us and some of the points that he brought up. Was there anything from that that stood out to you?
Yes, I loved page 37. I actually wrote this one out myself for my journal. The measure of our interior peace will be that of our abandonment, consequently our detachment. So the degree to which we abandon is the degree to which we will experience peace. Mm-hmm. And he talks before in section 4 about growing in confidence, a child's prayer, which I thought he's got some great like long titles of these sections. And I loved that long title of that section because he talks about how the only way to have confidence in someone is to have a relationship with them. And so if we're going to detach and we're going to abandon and we're going to surrender all of our life, not, you know, keeping one corner to ourselves to work out, we have to have a relationship so that we can be confident in that surrender. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that relationship is born, you know, out of contemplation with the Lord and spending time, particularly remembering, remembering who he is, remembering what he sounds like, remembering how he's acted in our lives, especially, you know, thinking of the cross and thinking of the passion and death and resurrection. I mean, thinking of the way that he's already given all for us, and that contemplation produces the confidence of a child who is comfortable in abandoning everything. And it says, again, great title, love it. God asks for everything, but he doesn't necessarily take everything. I think that's just so beautiful that we have, I think, this idea, like you're saying, abandonment. But then we're like worried that if we do abandon all of it, it means we'll lose it all. And that's not necessarily the case. He wants us to trust him with everything, and he's worthy of that. But it doesn't mean that he'll take everything, like ruin our lives, you know, like that's not his will, right. Certainly for us. And he's far more capable of making us happy than we are ourselves.
Right. I love that. Yeah. He talks about on page 38, just what you were saying, like that, the gnawing sense of loss. And then he says, by contrast, he who accepts to put everything into the hands of God, to allow him to give and take according to his good pleasure, this individual finds an inexpressible peace and interior freedom. And just knowing that when we place these things into the hands of the Lord, like the Lord's going to actually take care of us. I think it's going back to the idea that he actually wants us to be happy. The Lord desires our happiness. I have been struggling with this whole idea of just surrendering to the Lord. Just personally, we've been going through a hard time with having miscarriages, and we've had two miscarriages within the past 7 months, and it's been one of those challenging moments of our faith where I'm saying to the Lord, I trust you completely, and I'm surrendering to you, but this is very hard. Mm-hmm. And I had a moment actually the other day in prayer where I felt so paralyzed by fear, like fear of conceiving again or fear of, you know, miscarrying again, like fear in both ways. We had an opportunity where my husband and I went to just like a prayer service, and it was like a lot of like praise and worship and just like full prayer. And it was nice. I didn't have my children, who are beautiful, but often distracting when I'm trying to contemplate the gaze of Jesus.
Oh, yes. And can be a struggle.
And so I went into the prayer service and I was like, Lord, I think the biggest thing that I want to come out of this is just I want to have a tangible, greater trust in you. As I was praying, somebody got up and shared from the scriptures, and they shared a psalm. And this specific psalm had been the psalm that just popped into my head after our second miscarriage. And I don't actually know exactly where it is, but the thing that kept popping into my head was like, it just was like, the Lord is the stronghold of my life. He is my fortress, my shelter. Mm-hmm. I just kept saying that over and over. Like it was a terrible time. And I just kept saying, the Lord is the stronghold of my life. And so when this person got up and just kind of like shared this psalm, I just started like weeping. And I was like, mm-hmm. Lord, like, I know that you hear my prayers and that regardless of whatever we are going through right now, you are faithful and you are my stronghold. And I think it was just that moment of I have confidence in the Lord. And I needed that. I needed mm-hmm. that reassurance. Surrendering and abandoning to God is it's so difficult. But I was thinking about the risk of actually like living a life in general for the Lord, living our lives. Like we can have these, we have sufferings, like we have sickness, we have pain, but the risk of living, of not living life is just a life that's driven and controlled by fear. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that. I don't want that life, you know? And so it's like we have this choice to surrender to the Lord and to accept trials knowing he is with us, to maintain this peace so that we can live this life where we know he is in control. Yeah, this is like hard stuff, man.
It is very hard stuff. And it is a very, I mean, to be reading this book at that time,
yeah,
in your
exactly.
life when you're going through this, it is when you are asking him to be that stronghold in your life. I mean, and that I feel like his words back to you are, that's exactly who I am. Mm. Like, I got it. Like, I'm fit for this job. Yeah. Like, and that these times of just powerful suffering make it so apparent that you're not in control.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not in control. But of course, you want to try, especially when we're talking about our children. You know, a lot of the sections in this that were hardest to read are the ones where it's talking about watching someone you love suffer. When we're talking about our children, like that's the place I know where I most want to assert control, because I feel like to a certain extent, the Lord has given you this vocation and he wants you to do something beautiful with it. You know, you feel this obligation to do all you can possibly do to make this beautiful gift to the Lord. And I think that there can be a challenge in that. Like we're trying to control as much as we control. So because we love him, because we want to fulfill his yeah. will in our lives with the gifts that he's given us. But then also there's a danger in that too, right? And what you're keeping to yourself, your own control, and what you're giving to his completely. It surely is hard. It surely is a hard thing to let him love you in that and trust that somehow, some way, this is working for the sanctity of your whole family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard, hard thing.
Yeah.
I'm praying for you. And I know that there will be people who listen to this podcast that have had very similar, you know, stories, if not exactly mm-hmm. that story, but a story that they can certainly relate to in that, you know, mm-hmm. it was the section here of Psalm 23. That's my Psalm. So we're talking about something like Psalm 23. I mean, my wedding, my funeral, my birthday. Like, y'all want to break a psalm out? That's the psalm that I would like for you to break out. Also out of my great, great love for King David. But also that section, I thought, is this beautiful section of him kind of carving out some of the lies in our life. We have this illusion that if we just didn't have these bad circumstances in our life, if we just didn't have this trial right now, if we just didn't have these children that were keeping us from prayer, if we just didn't have all these circumstances, then we would be advancing in the spiritual life. Like once I get these things tucked away, or once, you know, I get these ducks in a row, or once I have more time, or once the circumstances improve, so also will my trust in the Lord, or so also will my peace. And he really just kind of, you know, pops that balloon straight away and says, like, the real life is not somewhere out there, but is in fact right now, exactly where you are. Yeah. In reality, it's our circumstances. It's not our circumstances that necessarily need to change, but our hearts.
Wow. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Take that one, right? Just punched in the face right there with that one. Yeah. And
it's
so
I think it's because it's so easy. It's so easy to put things on those circumstances or the state of life we're in or everything. Whereas it's like, no, it's about changing your heart. And you're like, oh, okay, about that.
Yeah.
That's a little about harder. That.
About that. In fact, the one thing you can do is to abandon. Like, so all these yeah. things we try to do to control, actually what you need to do is the only thing you can do, which is to abandon yourself to God's will. You know, especially as I said before, like when we're talking about our children, I think that's the hardest thing to do is to watch them go through difficult times or pain. You know, I've had a child that's had a lot of health issues. And so I can flash back to some great trauma situations there where you're just kind of like, why is this happening to my child? I don't want my child to carry this trauma with them for the rest of their lives. I don't, you know, just the really sad stuff that you see. But the idea that really resonated with me here was that he said something about the fact that basically entrusting our loved ones to the Lord is the most efficacious thing we can do to help them in their suffering. It is not to be anxious around them. Like, of course, we do all the things we can to try to help alleviate suffering, but it is in fact entrusting them and entrusting that they also are his children and they actually are his children first, and that he knows what's best for their sanctity and happiness. Mm-hmm. And he knows their whole stories, and he loves them more than we do. Yeah. And I think he really got at me there, because I think we see things that are hard in their lives in some way as reflecting on our not protecting them enough or not having done enough, or not having, I don't know, figured out some puzzle that if we had figured it out better ourselves, they wouldn't be enduring this, that there's some magical out, like a movie, right? Like we open this door and everything's fine, you know? Yeah. But in fact, that's really tainted with pride. It really is, because so often the person that's undergoing that hard time, like, we don't know what that's working in their lives and their hearts, and, mm-hmm. and that being peaceful and present to them is in fact the best thing that we can do.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's so true to remember this in relationships that are even like just challenging relationships within family dynamics, like older siblings or, mm-hmm. you know, parents, like older parents, or, you know, as you're an adult and trying to have these relationships with, you know, difficulties with other adult siblings now, or coworkers, or whatever it might be, that you feel like I've really failed them, or I really haven't like proclaimed the goodness of the Lord enough to them. And there's almost this guilt. And this is just so reassuring to say, like, the Lord has got them, and he loves. Sometimes you work so hard in relationships and then it just kind of it's over, it ends, whatever. But just knowing that the Lord is faithful, even in those difficulties, in those relationships, and to be patient with yourself, which I think is mm-hmm. our next kind of topic that we are going to be talking about, is just having patience with ourselves and others, and having patience with our just being human, that we are not God. And so we can't do things perfectly. I think you kind of touched a little bit on this, just like having that imperfections within our own faults and desiring to know the Lord more, but sometimes oftentimes sinning, and then just feeling like we failed. And then I think that a point that stood out to me in this section was how he talks about how even when we do fall, to continue to come to the Lord. And that was a huge one for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like sometimes we're like, oh, I can't come before you because I'm such a mess, or I can't, you know, I got to beat myself up for a while. I don't know. But like actually there was some phrase somewhere that actually said like you're right before the Lord is actually greater in that moment, because you are more in need of his attention and mercy. Wow. And I love the section about kind of patience with ourselves and with others, because I think sometimes, like you were even saying about like sharing the gospel with people, or like, did I do all the things that I could do? Or I feel like I'm praying for this person. I'm doing all these things and they're just not quite where I need them to be. And Father Philippe says something about, you know, the Lord is clearly willed for them to be where they are right now. He is clearly patient with them and the transformation that he's working in his life. Who are we to be less patient than the Lord is with them, right? And then he also says, like, yes, we must want the good of the other, but like we have to want the good of the other and do that in the right way. Like we can't just be impatient and cruel and short with people for the sake of our love of them and wanting them to be more virtuous. You know, like both things right. have to be good, like the desire and also the means that we kind of work towards, maybe the goal. Like our hearts have to be in peace if it is good. He said something on 54 I wrote down as well. It said, a desire that causes us to lose peace, even if the thing desired is excellent in itself, is not of God. Like basically, if it causes you a disquietude that remains, it's not of the Lord. Like that just isn't the language of the Lord. The language of the Lord is even peace, is always peace, even when it's corrective. And so when we think of our own faults, if we get into a pattern that our remorse leads us to just feeling really guilty or really bad or becoming lazy in your duties or leading into despair. Like, if that is not the voice of the Lord, mm-hmm. That yes, we should feel remorse at our sin, but then also like the evil one will take that remorse at sin, which is a good thing, our conscience kind of pinging us to bring us back to the Lord, take it and like run with it and distort it to the point like where it's really pride. Like, are we really upset that we offended the Lord, or are we upset that we're not the person we thought we were?
Wow. Yes.
And that, like, page 58 is where he really got into that, and it just wrecked me, because I loved when he gives you prayers to pray. Like, this is really good. He gives you the right kind of prayer of contrition. You know, like, Lord, I ask your pardon. I've sinned again. Here, dear Jesus, me. Exactly. It's me again.
I'm like, let me take this to prayer. Yeah. I just repeat it.
Yes. But like, alas, this is what I'm capable of doing on my own. Right. Mm-hmm. But I abandon myself with confidence to your mercy and your pardon. And I thank you for not allowing me to sin even more grievously. Right. And then it goes on to talk about that. So that there's a, yes, sin is grave, and we should never want to offend the Lord, and we should always repent immediately and feel bad about that bad thing we did. But we shouldn't dwell in it. If we're dwelling in a disquietude, that is not from the Lord. That was really revelatory for me.
That's so beautiful. I love that you can just kind of sit with some of these sentences and just kind of allow the Lord to really penetrate your heart. Mm-hmm. And to say, like, Lord, I'm very far from this, but I desire to be close to you.
Yeah. And that it also shows when we get really mad at ourselves or beat ourselves up about our sin, it really maybe betrays a lack of trust in the fact that the Lord can draw good from bad, and that he can take the good in our lives and the bad in our lives and transform them to his purposes. So even in our guilt or remorse of our sin, we have to discern the spirits there. Mm-hmm. And that was not something that I had ever really thought of before. And that when we are feeling far from the Lord, like, what do we do when we sin? Again, great title, 15. What should we do when we have sinned? Do not neglect prayer. You have more right, as we said, to draw near to the Lord because you're in need of mercy. But also know that the Lord sometimes allows us to fall for the sake of our presumption and our pride, like saving us. Like, if we were perfect, that would probably be, if we're doing everything right, that would probably not be great for our advancement in holiness. Right. Because we would be very prideful and very presumptuous that we were just ticking all the boxes.
I like how he says right before 15, he says, he who falls but immediately gets up has not lost much. He has rather gained in humility and in the experience of mercy. He who remains sad and defeated loses much more. The sign of spiritual progress is not so much never falling as it is being able to lift oneself up quickly after one falls.
Yes.
And that really resonated with me, just knowing that from this experience, we have gained humility and the experience of mercy. Mm-hmm. And often, even today, I feel I had just been very angry with my sweet dear children. And I was like, Lord, like, this is just hard for me. I just want to go and sit and like pray. And of course, I was using my excuses of like, but I have this and this. Mm-hmm. And just trying to find solace in the fact that it might not look exactly perfect in my mind how I think things should look, but trying to say, Lord, I really, from the depths of my heart, I want to be close to you. I just think that sometimes my prayer needs to be more just a transformation of the heart, like he was talking about, more of just this idea of it's not going to look exactly how I think it's going to look. And that's okay, because I am not in control. Mm-hmm. But as long as I'm allowing the Lord to move and giving that space, like he was talking about, that space for the Holy Spirit to move me in a way that I didn't think I was going to be moved by the Holy Spirit today. Mm-hmm. And for that to be our prayer, you know, every day, because yeah, it usually doesn't look how we want it to.
No. And that's probably way better that our eyes have not seen nor our ears heard, you know, that our picture of holiness is probably far deficient to the one that the word of life has designed for us. Yeah, that's really, that's a great prayer to pray in the middle of the day when things are going awry. Yes, when things will go awry. It's that bloody dog of goodwill, isn't
that's
it really?
Right. That's the bloody dog.
Did you get that tattoo?
Oh, not quite yet.
Not yet. Okay, still we're still in design phase.
Yeah, I'm between that now or just the asparagus, the reminder of the asparagus. Just like how St. John of the Cross just asked for asparagus and then it appeared.
Yeah.
And just that reminder of like, oh, yeah. Wow.
He cares even for your vegetable preferences. How deep the Lord's love for you goes. To the depths.
I was like, man, why asparagus? You know? Like, why?
Why not? Why not? I mean, if I got a tattoo, it would maybe be the Sacred Heart of Jesus. But St. John of the Cross, that asparagus really showed him Heart of Jesus.
Him.
So,
yeah. Well, it just appeared there.
There you go, man. Guadalupe was the particular rose. John of the Cross is an asparagus. I mean, I think that's a reflection of his holiness. We look then at the kind of last category that we were talking about, it was a beautiful section on discernment, which I am really enjoying learning about discernment, particularly working with college students who talk about it a lot. It comes up so much that how do we make decisions? And it is very true that when we're in the midst of decision making and in our lives as mothers, our decisions affect a lot of people other than ourselves, that it can be something that steals your peace. In particular, hearkening back to an earlier section, because we're not patient. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like step one, it said, in facing a decision is do not hurry. And that has been a constant reminder in this book has been frenzy and hurry are just against peace. And as somebody who is always doing three things at the same time, it's been a great reminder to me that decisions born out of frenzy are often just not well discerned. Mm-hmm. And so that was a great sort of first step. And then he talks really about considering motivations in our decisions. I think that's a great point, because I think a lot of the time we look at the pros and the cons of things and we do take it to prayer, but we don't often ask ourselves, well, why would I want A and why would I want B? Mm-hmm. And are those motivations ones of a clean heart or are they self-serving? I've got some college students that I tell you they are far farther down the road than I am. Wow. And I had one say to me, please pray that I will know if the reason that I want to do this thing is just for myself or if it's truly for the good of this other. And I'm like, okay, well, you've read this book, huh? And then also talks about seeking advice in a spiritual advisor as well as in the Lord, and that sometimes the Lord is humbling us in the way of like finding that final confirmation, not from our own prayer, but through this person, because the Lord desires for us to be not alone on our spiritual journeys. And so there are these people who are to be in some ways an instrument of God's voice in our life when we're not hearing it ourselves. Like, and that is a growth in humility as well. But then the last part there that he talks about is what to do when the Lord you don't get a clear answer.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was really interesting.
You've done all the right things. You've taken it to prayer. You've sought advice. You've examined your heart and your motivations, and still there's no answer, but there needs to be a decision. And I think we need to turn to St. Faustina so that Rachel will listen to the podcast. And there was a quote from St. Faustina that, you know, basically said something along the lines of, well, then you just have
73.
73. Okay, good. Will you read it? I don't know. I'm not there yet. I couldn't find it.
It says, when one does not know what is best, one must reflect, consider, and take counsel, because one does not have the right to act in incertitude of conscience. In incertitude, if the incertitude remains, one must tell oneself, whatever I do, it will be good, provided that I have the intention to do good. And then she goes on to say, that which we consider good, God accepts and considers as good. Don't be, what is that word? Chagrined? I don't know.
Chagrined? Chagrined. Yeah, chagrin. Well, chagrin.
That's a great word.
It's like kind of like don't be
discouraged or something.
Yeah, discouraged.
Chagrined.
Yeah.
I like it. If after a certain time you see that these things are not good.
And that even then, so we are called not to in incertitude to just sit forever, but rather to do the best that we can with what we've been given through the different sources, through prayer, through evaluation, through waiting, through all of those things, we make a choice. We don't sit. Like we do something, and then we trust that our good intention will make it good. And if it's the bad, if it wasn't the right choice, that's okay too, because we'll have grown in humility. And it is actually a good thing. Obviously, humility is a good thing, but it's a thing that prevents us from pride. So, and especially perfectionism. There's a quote on 75 that I think I need to put like on my mirror, in my journal, and everywhere. Perfectionism doesn't have much to do with sanctity. Wow. Let me play that one back. Perfectionism doesn't have much to do with sanctity. You know, oftentimes the evil one, when we are far from God, tempts us farther from God, tempts us away from God with bad things, with evil. But maybe when we're trying to be closer to the Lord, he will certainly still tempt us with bad things. But then also the assault, so maybe even get worse. He will tempt us with good things and putting in front of us the good things we should be doing for God. And that we should just be trying harder, or, you know, we should never be making mistakes. And so perfectionism becomes a huge temptation and something that can lead you into despair, because obviously we cannot be perfect. And so I thought that was a great reminder. And even as you get closer to the Lord, scrupulosity, which is one of my favorite advanced Catholic words of recent trend, is also really a temptation to just look at every single tiny fault with a hypercritical eye that in no way would be the way that the Lord would have us look at it.
Wow. That is so good. What a great reminder. I think that's a great place to end. It's just this idea of the perfectionism doesn't mean sanctity, and how we can fully rely on the Lord and trust him.
I actually have a pretty good quote I thought was a great one to end on page 80.
Let's do it.
We will be saints the day when our inabilities and our nothingness will no longer be for us a subject of sadness and anxiety, but a subject of peace and joy. It's speaking into the fact that we are aware of who God is and who we are, that he is God, he is good, and he loves us, and we are not good. He is our stronghold and trustworthy.
All right. It was-